This is Gulf Coast Live Arts Edition from WGCU. I'm John Davis. The newly renamed Punta Gorda Symphony is kicking off a new season of performances, including an impressive roster of world-class guest soloists and performances of both well-loved and lesser-known classical works. Music director Raffaella Ponti announced the symphony's new name earlier this month as he begins his seventh season as maestro. I recently sat down with Maestro Ponti for a detailed look at what's in store for the symphony's 2019-2020 season. We began our conversation exploring what's behind the name change from the Charlotte Symphony Orchestra to the Punta Gorda Symphony.
The Charlotte Symphony Orchestra is now a fully professional orchestra of 70 professional musicians who come from all over Florida. And we just have rebranded the entire symphony and renamed the symphony to be the Punta Gorda Symphony Orchestra. And this is a very exciting moment for us because this, like every orchestra in the country, the city that they're in is their name, so we can identify with them. And the city, not only the audience members, but the city council, the county commissioners, and the patrons and people of Punta Gorda have just embraced this orchestra, and we are very proud to put their name with the symphony now. So it's now the Punta Gorda Symphony Orchestra, and I couldn't be happier.
All right. I kind of like that idea of, you know, really identifying yourself with the city as opposed to the broader Charlotte County. That's interesting. You had noted when we spoke, gosh, I guess it was almost 7 years ago now, how whenever you first came down to conduct / audition for the position you're now going into your seventh season with, how many art offerings there already were in the area and just how you could envision building the symphony. And it looks like you've been doing a lot of that over the last 7 years.
You know, we're really blessed. My principal bass is the former principal bass of the Metropolitan Opera. One of my violin players is from the first violin section of the Metropolitan Opera. I have people from the New York Philharmonic in my string section. My concertmaster is associate concertmaster of the Naples Philharmonic, Ming Gao, and it goes on and on. My principal percussionist is Dean Anderson, who was the principal percussion with the Boston Pops for many, many years. I mean, it's just an amazing thing that these people are retiring down to Florida, and the buzz on the street is they want to play in a good orchestra, and this is what's happening. I consider this to be my all-star orchestra. It's fantastic.
Well, while we're on that topic, I wanted to ask about your other work outside of the symphony, because I believe you're still conducting the Paducah Symphony Orchestra out in Kentucky, also director of orchestral studies at Florida International University, also guest conducting with prominent orchestras all over the U.S. and Europe. Tell me just about your schedule and how much time you're able to spend with us here in Southwest Florida with all of your other artistic endeavors.
You know, it's about scheduling, it's about being organized and preparing in advance, but thank goodness for FaceTime, so I can not only communicate with my board members, my staff in Europe, I can still communicate with them on a daily basis as needed, and also my family recognizes me periodically, so I get to spend time with my wife and my daughter. It's just a busy thing, and my fear, John, is that I get on the plane with the wrong set of scores.
Right.
And the next thing it fears me is that I pack my suit. But just short of that, it's about being organized, being way ahead in score study, because, as you know, a lot of my job is about meeting people, raising funds, getting people in the community and out of the community excited about the arts and about the symphony orchestra in particular, whether it's the Punta Gorda Symphony or the Paducah Symphony Orchestra, or just my work as a conductor, whether I'm guest conducting, because even in those weeks, I'm promoting other people's orchestras and getting them excited about their situations, because that's part of our job as guest conductors, is to promote the arts no matter where we are. But it's also very important to make sure that you walk on that podium for that first rehearsal and you know that score inside and out better than anybody else on that stage. And that's that constant walk of balance for me that I have to really stay focused on, because it could become secondary with all the responsibilities.
Right. Well, and on the topic of that, you know, broader community outreach and education, You kind of turned things upside down a little bit whenever you first took over there back in the 2013-2014 season, making your presence known in a lot of the public schools in the Charlotte County area with educational programming like Symphony Kids, where I know you spent time with entire grades in these schools, not just the kids who were already learning to play instruments. Is that kind of educational outreach something that is still important to your work in Punta Gorda?
This is very, very important in the entire county and beyond, actually, because I call them maestro visits, and they call them maestro visits, because I actually go in, like you said, and I work with the entire third grade at one time. We put them all in either the cafeteria or a gymnasium, whatever they decide to do, and we bring in these large programs. And it makes it relative to the kids because, you know, we all know the symphony orchestra. Whether you go to the concert hall or not, or if that's in your DNA or in your lifestyle, we all have heard a symphony. If you've watched television for 10 seconds or watched a motion film, we have seen and heard an orchestra. And once these kids realize that Harry Potter film would not be that exciting if it was without a symphony, they realize it's just a bunch of jumping around. And we try to make this relevant to them. And then we bust them in to a free concert in the season, and they are actually now participating in the performance with our link-up program with Carnegie Hall. Both of my orchestras, including the Punta Gorda Symphony now, are in the second year of working with the Carnegie Hall programs, where the kids, for example, last year they came in and they played recorders from their seats in the audience. Everyone in that audience played along with the symphony, and it's remarkable how their music educators taught them this throughout the whole year with the curriculum that's provided by Carnegie Hall. And these kids were following me and were absolutely together. It was mesmerizing and very powerful because then these kids go home and say, not only did the maestro visit their school, and they feel like they're my friends because when they see me at the concert, they're cheering because, hey, that's the guy who came to my school. But they can go home and say to their family and friends, I didn't just go to the concert today at the Punta Gorda Symphony. I actually played with the symphony. And that's remarkable.
Right, right. As far as education and outreach for adults, is the Behind the Notes programming something that will continue?
This is going to continue. I actually enjoy doing this program. And this is a Friday, 4 o'clock at FSW in Punta Gorda, right in the auditorium. And what I do is I introduce music that's going to be heard in that weekend for the concert. People pay to come to this program, and they sit there. It's an hour and a half in length. I show examples on YouTube of different conductors conducting maybe the same overture, and we talk about how Toscanini's tempo and idea differs from Von Karajan, and we see it back to back, and then the audience gets to start to listen in a different way, and they're looking for certain things that I'm pointing out to them, whether the string players are playing closer to the frog, or they're playing on the fingerboard, or upper half, lower half of the bow. These are things that they've never really thought about before while they're sitting there at a symphony. The other thing is then I also invite the guest artists of that coming week to participate, and we get a close-up look and a talk with these artists, and they also play musical examples for us and demonstrate their instruments in a very personal way, and it's more of a chamber conversation, and then the audience gets a chance to ask questions so that when they arrive on the weekend to hear the concerto with the symphony in the concert hall, they feel they have an intimate idea of what the music is going to be like, what to listen for, and how their conductor and their orchestra is going to interpret it and bring it to life. But also they feel intimate and personal with the guest artists they spend time with.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really enriches the experience for certain. Well, and I want to touch on some of these amazing guest artists who you've got lined up for the coming season. But first, let's talk about the performance coming up in just a couple days. This is going to be the symphony performing what's been dubbed John Williams and Friends. Going to be a lot of recognizable compositions from films like E.T., as you mentioned, Harry Potter, Pirates of the Caribbean. What can you tell us about this show? This seems like one of the more broadly accessible ones, just because this is music that's so prevalent in popular culture.
Exactly right. You know, as our concert hall right now is the Charlotte Performing Arts Center, which is on the campus of the high school. It's a very nice auditorium with great acoustics. This idea of John Williams and Friends, was an added program that I decided to put in to kick off the season because this is widely acceptable. Everyone knows and loves John Williams' music, but it's also music of Hans Zimmer, James Horner, Danny Elfman. It's sounds of Star Wars, Harry Potter, E.T., Spider-Man, Pirates of the Caribbean, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Apollo 13 is a beautifully haunting film score. And like I mentioned to you before, the combination of these artists bringing the film to life through sound is such a gift. They're not only great musicians with great ideas and great themes, but they're wonderful orchestrators. And that's really, really important. Yet, it's not a 50-50 marriage between the screen and the orchestra, because if you were to watch this film without a soundtrack and just the dialogue and picture, it would be less than special. But you can live the moment through music alone, and this is one of those examples. And my hope is that this is going to attract a more diverse audience to the symphony so that people will realize that, wow, right here in my own backyard, there is a great professional symphony orchestra. Maybe we'll go back and listen to the Mendelssohn or the Tchaikovsky or the Shostakovich.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And let's just move ahead a couple weeks to the symphony's November 10th performance. This is going to feature bassist Leonid Finkelstein performing Kozakowski's double bass concerto in F-sharp minor. Now, at the time the composer composed this piece in 1902, and perhaps this is still a bit true today, there really wasn't a whole lot in the way of repertoire for bass players soloing with a symphony orchestra.
It's really not. Serge Koussevitzky was a great bass player himself, and as we know, he became the conductor of the Boston Symphony, and this still stays at the top of the list of bass concertos, which is not such a large body of work. Unfortunately, we don't consider the bass to be a solo instrument because it generally has a foundation in chords in the symphony orchestra, so we build on that instrument. But when you hear this very virtuosic concerto and you hear the colors and the possibilities of the bass, people will be very, very surprised at how beautiful and how much the color is an attractive color. Sometimes in the upper register, it sounds like a beautiful cello, and then it can get really dark and deep into the really low harmonics. It's just a gorgeous instrument, and Mr. Finkelstein is a fabulous musician. I've heard him do this concerto, and it's going to be an absolute beautiful moment for the audience to see a bass stand in front of a symphony orchestra and be a solo voice. It's going to be very special. We open that concert up with Don Juan, of course, of Strauss. This is a wonderful piece that Richard Strauss wrote. And also, I'm going to close the symphony with Mendelssohn's Symphony No. 5 in D major. This is a beautiful piece of music that Mendelssohn wrote, his final symphony. And I think every time I open up a Mendelssohn score, I'm often reminded of his beautiful tribute to Bach and how much he loves his counterpoint and how much he uses fugal writing and how great a young composer and musician Mendelssohn was.
Yeah, I'm curious because, you know, I know whenever you're looking to book these soloists, often they're booking their tours 2 and 3 years out. So that's like a logistical restriction there. But other than that, you have pretty much free rein in designing what's going to be included in these concerts. And I'm wondering if you have sort of a philosophy or an approach that might involve featuring a piece of music that isn't perhaps as well known, but then also making sure that these performances also include more widely known pieces, or maybe I'm just completely off there in making that assumption.
John, you are totally on, and I think that's the formula for me. It's about giving them something that they know that's going to be the meat and potatoes of the program. For example, let's take the last program, for example. I'm opening with Dvorak Symphony No. 9, the New World Symphony, from the New World. Everyone knows and loves it. It's one of the most probably accessible and most recorded or played piece of all time, the Dvorak. And I then am putting on a piece by Ken Fuchs, who just won a Grammy with the London Symphony Orchestra. And I'm bringing on Grammy Award-winning pianist Jeffrey Deagle, who played that recording with the London Symphony of Ken's piece. It's called Spiritualist, which is a piano concerto with orchestra. It's a beautiful piece, very challenging for the orchestra and the pianist, but it's very tonal and very lovely. And it just won a Grammy. And I think that's very fresh and exciting. And then I'm ending with Shostakovich's Festive Overture, which again is a very well-known overture, and will leave the audience with such great energy and joy. So we've got the Dvorak, which is well-known and will be beautifully played with all its singable melodies. Then we've got the new piece, Fuchs, which just won the Grammys with Grammy Award-winning pianist Jeffrey Beagle, and then the Shostakovich to close it, to get them on their feet. You know, something new, something old, something exciting.
Right, and I'm really hoping that I'll get the chance to speak with Jeffrey Beagle before that performance. But I also found it remarkable that the fact that the piece got written came from Beagle's own efforts to expand the piano and orchestra repertoire by commissioning 10 composers to write new works, and Fuchs was one of those. This is what came out of that. So that's really interesting. These are like the first folks who wrote and performed this piece.
That's exactly right. And Jeffrey has some of course, input on the piano part, you know, because you have to make sure that it's A, playable. Is that realistic? Is this going to be played by other people? Because Jeffrey is an incredible technique and has so many concerti in his head at all times, in his hands at all times. But that's his niche. Jeffrey Beagle is trying to expand the piano concerto repertoire, and he's doing it very successfully. And we're lucky to know Ken Fuchs. He's a great composer.
And I wanted to skip ahead a little bit to the first performance of the Punagorda Symphony Orchestra in January. This will be on January 12th with violinist David Kim. And I've actually been in contact with Kim just in the past couple weeks, so he will certainly be featured on a future edition of this program, Gulf Coast Live Arts Edition. He's the concertmaster with the Philadelphia Orchestra. And I'm just so stoked for what he's going to be performing, because the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto in E minor, I think back when I was in middle school, I bought a recording of Itzhak Perlman performing this with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And well, I know I could never actually perform or even transcribe this. My brain, like by heart, knows every note to that first movement. I can't wait for that performance.
I'm sure. You never forget great things. Huh? It's just amazing how music can touch our lives, and you remember where you were and the emotion of it. And David Kim, I've worked with David before. He's a stellar concertmaster and an amazing soloist. And those are two really different things. You may be a great concertmaster, but standing up and playing concerti is a real different voice, a different style, and a different technique. He does both very, very well. So I'm excited to have David coming in. I mean, all season long, we've got great artists coming in, doing great repertoire. And on that program also, I'm very proud of, in my research of programming, I found a piece by Amy Beach, Symphony No. 2 in E minor. It's titled The Gaelic Symphony. And I have uncovered a huge list of fabulous women composers that should be and must be heard. So I'm going to take this opportunity to kick off this season, January 12th, with Amy Beach. But I think this is going to be a mini-series that I'm going to carry through for all the seasons. There's so much great repertoire and great female voices out there that for some reason in society were held back, not played, or not taken seriously because of bad things in the world, I think. But they deserve a voice, and I hope to lend it to them.
Yeah, she was the first American woman to publish a symphony. I was really excited to read that too. And keeping with your formula of, you know, having lesser known pieces performed alongside more well known pieces, this is where you kind of have to change that up a bit, because in this piece, what the soloist is playing is the more recognizable Mendelssohn Violin Concerto. And then it's the Amy Beach part of the program that's going to be stuff that folks probably haven't heard.
That's correct. I mean, they may have heard it. It gets a little playability in the States here, but I'm going to tell you, it's Brahmsian sounding form. There's parts of Beethoven which were her loves. You're going to hear real Brahms ideas, form, and she loved Beethoven. And again, we're going to hear some of that in the symphony itself. I'm going to tell you, when you walk away, you're going to love it, and you're going to say, why don't we hear that more?
Right. All right. And I love this idea of bringing in more, you know, works by women composers in the future. That'll be wonderful. Well, moving on to the February 9th performance, we've actually got a guitarist in the soloist chair performing a piece by Castelnuovo Tedesco, the Guitar Concerto No. 1. I understand he was a pretty prolific film composer. I was curious about just how recent in history it is that we see guitars as soloing with orchestras in music composition. So that is that a newer innovation in orchestral music?
I don't think so. I think, you know, if you look back in Italy, for example, the guitar, classical guitar, was a very important instrument back in those days. And I think, of course, the Spanish music is very beautiful. And guess who one of his students, when he came to the United States in Los Angeles to do films, and I don't remember, I'd have to look it up for sure. I don't remember exactly, but he might have written like 40-some film scores. You probably know more than I do about that. That either they didn't put his name on it, he was like a ghostwriter, or it just didn't get the recognition for some reason. But I think he was, for a short time, the teacher of John Williams.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this is somebody that we need to hear as well. I actually was a guest conductor 2 years ago for the Miami Guitar Festival down in Miami, Florida. And they asked me to do this, and I selected this piece, and his granddaughter, Maria Castelnuovo Tedesco, actually came to the performance and talked about her grandfather and kind of had slides and history about him. And she's keeping his legacy and body of work alive. And Jalil Kaya, who's going to be my soloist, was the soloist at that festival. And he is an absolute up-and-coming, fabulous guitarist that you're really going to enjoy. It's just terrific.
Excellent. I think we've touched on everything except for the January 26th concert, which is going to bring in guest soloist, pianist William Wolfram, to perform Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 21. What can you tell us about that program?
Well, it opens up with Mendelssohn's The Hebrides, Fingal's Cave, which is a great concert overture written just as an overture, depicting Mendelssohn's trip to Fingal's Cave. And he actually hand-scribbled on the score. It's called The Hebrides, where it was, but he wrote Fingal's Cave on hand, so it kind of goes by both titles. A great piece of music. I love that overture. And then the Mozart 21 has got to be one of my top five favorite Mozart piano concertos. And William Wolfram is such a classy player, elegant, really true understanding of the style. And you can look any of these artists up for this season, you'll see that they're working with A-list orchestras. And I'm very excited to be able to say, you know, okay, I played with Chicago, I played with Berlin, I played with Philadelphia, and now I'm going to the Punta Gorda Symphony. Just as such an idea of wanting to make music on this level. And the fact is that they understand, because it's a small business world out there. And when my soloists leave our orchestra, they talk. And agents talk, and now they all are clamoring to come, not only because the weather is part of it, but it's nice to get these talents to say, listen, I'm going to the Punta Gorda Symphony, and man, did they play. It was a great experience, a great week. So it's just a joy. And on the end of that program is Tchaikovsky Symphony No. 5, which everybody knows and loves. Again, following that same formula.
Right. Well, I'm additionally just looking forward to, you know, not just seeing these performances, but also getting to speak with all of these guest artists and also sort of be a conduit for other audience members to ask their own questions of these folks in our pre-show interviews, musical conversations with John Davis. And I'm really looking forward to doing that again with the symphony this year.
Well, I got to tell you, John, you've done such a wonderful job. I'm so pleased and honored that you're continuing to be the voice of the symphony. Those musical conversations are well attended. Matter of fact, it's standing room only for each time, and you're doing a great job. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Maestro Ponti, and thank you so much for giving us this season preview. And you know, we're so excited to continue featuring what you're doing with the newly named Punta Gorda Symphony Orchestra.
Thank you, and I look forward to seeing everyone at the symphony.
That was music director and maestro of the Punta Gorda Symphony, Raffaella Ponti. For more information, visit pgsymphony.org. That's all the time we have. If you missed any of today's show, you can always hear episodes in full on our website, golfcoastlive.org, or you can subscribe to the Gulf Coast Live podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Our program today was produced by yours truly. Our director is Richard Cinqui. Our social media coordinator is Tarek Halligan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm John Davis. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.